Shalom and welcome back to OU.org and www.etshalom.com, where we are currently studying the book of Shmuel, the book of Samuel, and are about to begin, as I promised in the last podcast, the bridge between Sefer Shmuel and the next sub-unit of the book. And that bridge is comprised of the eighth chapter of Perek Chet, which is a seminal chapter in Sefer Shmuel. If you recall, the end of Perek Zion closed the circles and gave us a mini-bio of Shmuel, indicating that we were sort of finished with his story, although, again, his most significant task, and the one for which he will best be known in history, lies yet before him, and that is naming a king. But we get the setup of the significance of Perek Chet in the first three psukim. Vayhi kasher zaken Shmuel, Vayasan panav shoftim li Yisrael. And when Shmuel became old, he made his turned his sons into shoftim. And we will find out here that in this case, shoftim really means judges. Israel. Now, what this indicates is that Shmuel, as he was getting old, was interested in his sons taking over for him. In other words, Shmuel seemed to be developing the notion of a dynasty right away, and the idea sounds like potentially good, except for the following problem. So he set them up as Shoftim in Beersheva, which means they were pretty much on the other side of the country as he, and in a relatively small and outlying district. Why is that the case? Unclear. But the result of it is, his sons did not follow in his ways. We'll talk about the word batsa in a moment, but for right now, provisionally, it means money. They were inclined after money. They had interest in money. And they took bribes, and they subverted justice. There's a play on the word nata, nun tet hei, which means to lean or to incline or to stretch out. They themselves reclined after money, and therefore they subverted or caused other reclining in justice. It was bent the wrong way. Now, first of all, just a small note about the word betza. The word betza means to cut. And that's why, for instance, in Shulchan Aruch Arachayim, you will find Hilchot Bitziat HaPat, the laws of breaking bread. And yet the word Betza, as early as the book of Bereishit, also means money. Yehuda says to his brothers, Ma Betza ki narog et achinu. What profit is there to us if we kill Yosef, let's sell him, etc.? How does one connect to the other? The answer is in a pasuk that those of you studying in the Nach Yomi program already encountered in Shirat Devarah in Shoftim Parakei. It talks about the king's betza kesef lo lakachu. What's a betza kesef? It's a cut of silver. From the ancient world, they used to take a chunk of silver and cut it into pieces, and each piece represented a monetary unit. So therefore, betza, which really means a cut piece, ends up meaning, as a sort of abbreviation for the phrase Betza Kesef, ends up meaning money. All right, so by the time we get to Shmuel, that's what it means. They inclined after money. They were interested in money, and they took shochad. They took bribes, and as a result, they subverted Mishpat. Before going ahead, we just have to note something about a pattern that exists. Shmuel is not the first hero that we know of who has two sons, and whose two sons fail to follow in his footsteps, and indeed foul the whole notion of a continuity of what he has started. In our own Sefer, we saw the same exact thing with Eli. Eli is evidently a great person. He's a shofet, he's the Kohen Gadol, he's the one who runs the Mikdash, and nonetheless, his sons are abject failures and lead to the destruction of his entire household, as we saw in Perek Bet, and later on in Perek Dalet. But it doesn't start with Eli. You look further back in history, you find that no one less than Moshe Rabbeinu had two sons, and his sons were no great successes. And the proof is that neither one of them was even considered as a follower for Moshe, unlike Aharon, whose sons followed and took over the Kuhuna, Elazar, and Itamar. after the death of Nadav and Avihu. But Moshe's sons, Gershom and Eliezer, don't pick up in his ways, and we even find at the end of Shoftim that Yonatan ben Gershom ben Moshe, Moshe's own grandson, who was a Levi, of course, was a Kohen for Avodah Zarah with Shevet Dan. We find throughout history that it is very difficult for great leaders to raise great leaders. Continuity in greatness is something that has eluded the greatest, and perhaps it's because they're the greatest and they're so focused on the public and on the public needs that they aren't able to give proper attention to their own children. But in any case, we find it happening again here, painfully for Shmuel, when his sons turn out to be not only not great leaders, but absolutely corruptors and abusers of their position, much like Hophni and Pinchas abused their position in the Mishkan. So now what happens? Vayikabtsu kol zikne Yisrael, all the elders came, vayavohu el Shmuel haramata. This time, unlike in Perek Zion, they gather in Ramah, because Shmuel is not gathering them. They are gathering to come to Shmuel, because they're going to make a demand of Shmuel. Vayimru elav, here's what they said. Hine atazakanta, behold, you're old. Uvanecha lo alchu v'drachecha. In other words, what we are told in Psukim Aleph and Gimel, they now say directly, and it sounds somewhat nervy, but they say it directly to Shmuel, you're old and your kids are rotten, which means we're concerned about continuity of leadership. Now, let's take a bead for a moment. In Sefer Shoftim, we do not have continuity of leadership. We have a leader who arises dynamically as a result of a great need, HaKadosh Baruch Hu inspires him, whether it's Ehud or Gideon or Yiftach, they rise up, they lead after the critical war. We're told that they lead for another 40 years, 80 years, however long it is. There's peace, there's quiet, and then they die, and then there's no leadership. Until the next crisis comes, and the next shofet is risen from the people, is picked up from the people. The people here, in our case, don't seem to be willing to continue with that pattern. And they come to Shmuel and say, you're old, your kids have not gone in your way. Lata sima lanu melech l'shofteinu kechol hagoyim. Appoint for us a king, l'shofteinu. So what does l'shofteinu mean? We discussed this in the previous parak. To lead us, not to judge us, to lead us, just as all of the other nations have. Now, traditionally we read that phrase and we're very upset because the fact that they say kechol hagoyim. In other words, it's okay to have a king. There's a mitzvah of minui melech, according to most Rishonim, according to pretty much everybody except the Abravanel, there's a mitzvah of minui melech. But, even though it's a machlok at Masechet Sanhedrin. We read that, yes, it's appropriate to have a king, but the way that they asked was not correct. Indeed, that's the way the Gemara interprets the problem here, because Shmuel is going to react negatively to their response. However, what is it that they're really saying, Kechol HaGoyim? They're not necessarily saying we want a king who's deified like the other nations, and a king who behaves like the kings of the other nations. All they're saying is all of the other nations around us have the security of continuity of leadership, and they don't have the fear that with the death of the leader, there's going to be a chasm that will only be filled when there's another crisis, as we've had now for several hundred years. And so that's what they're asking for. What's Shmuel's reaction? It's predictable, because Shmuel himself appointed his own sons, in spite of their faults, appointed them as judges, so it seems that he sees in them the next generation of leadership. Vayera davar b'nei Shmuel, kasher amru t'nalanu melech shofteinu. Vayipalel Shmuel Adonai. Shmuel was very upset about the fact that they said, give us a king to lead us, and he prayed to Hashem. However, what was he upset about? We don't know what he's upset about until we actually find out from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we're going to find out now. Before we get any further into this piece, let's keep in mind that the structure of this parak is very much of a ping pong, in which the people approach Shmuel, Shmuel approaches Hashem. We've done those two steps so far. Hashem is going to give Shmuel a message, which he's going to then relate to the people. The people are going to then give Shmuel a message. He's going to relate to Hashem. Hashem is going to give a message, which will relate to the people. And we have effectively a three, sort of like a fancy calligraphed E, going from one side to the other, back and forth three times. Okay. This is a pattern that we've seen before. And if you recall, in our study of the third chapter, we saw that Shmuel has, in many ways, is compared to Moshe, even in the alliteration of his name, and the fact that the nature of his name, and where he is raised, and how his mother gives him up, and everything else, and notably in Perek Gimel, with the keyword and with the midrash about the voice that Moshe heard. Perhaps worth reviewing the shiur on Perek Gimel to go over that. The same thing appears here. There's also a scene in which Moshe acts as middleman between Hashem and the people, and it goes back and forth, where the people speak, Moshe brings the response to Hashem, Hashem speaks to Moshe, brings them to the people, and it goes back and forth several times. That is in Shmot Perek Yod Tet. And the two scenes have much in common. I'll comment on the rest of that when we finish the Perek, and we'll see what they have in common and how different they are. Once we draw them together in comparison, we will see the contrast, which is perhaps somewhat upsetting, but very instructive. What does Hashem say? Vayomer Adonai Shmuel, Shema b'kol ha'am, obey the people. L'chol Hashem Elecha, whatever they tell you, ki lo otchal ma'asu, it's not you they rejected. In other words, Shmuel is feeling that they've rejected him, and they've rejected his choice of his own sons. Ki oti ma'asu im lo chalayim, it's me they've rejected from ruling over them. In other words, the people are not rejecting you in saying, we want a different king, we don't want your sons. Rather, they're rejecting me because what they're rejecting is that chasm, that the faith that when there's a need for a leader, there'll be a leader. And in the meantime, Hashem is your leader. Right? Rather, they rejected that. And he compares it to something quite awful. It's just like everything that they've done from the time I took them out of Egypt until today. Vayazvuni, they've abandoned me. Vayavdu Elohim Achirim, and they worship other gods. Kein Hema Osim Gamlach. This is exactly what they're doing to you. In other words, Hashem is sort of saying to Shmuel, now you know how it feels for me when they abandon me to go to other gods. Now they're abandoning you and your family to look for other leaders. But on the other hand, Shmuel, be aware that what they're really abandoning is their faith in me and abandoning their connection to me. They want to have, as all the other nations have, the security of continuity and not the need for the faith. But what's Hashem's reaction? We would assume at this point that Hashem would say, and they're doing a terrible thing, and tell them they're doing a terrible thing, and don't give them a king. But Hashem already said, Shema b'kol ha'am. And then Hashem, remember we talked about an inclusio, and now within this small passage we have another inclusio. It starts out, Shema b'kol ha'am in Pasuk Zayin, and now in Pasuk Tet, V'yata Shema b'kol ha'am. And now, listen to their voice, which means obey them. So between verses 7 and 9, again, we have this parenthetic or bookends of obey the people. But in the middle is the statement about what's really happening. What's really happening is terrible, but you still have to give them a king, either because giving them a king is ultimately a good thing, but their motivation is bad, as many have posited, or because the whole idea is a bad thing, but this is what the people need right now, and even though it's not great, maybe there'll be a way to save something. Now, the ha'id in Hebrew means to testify. But ha'id comes from an earlier word. In Akkadian, ha'id means to warn. So ha'id ta'id b'hem is properly translated as warn them. Tell them what the rule of the king, mishpat ha'melech, that will rule over them. And it's a curious twist, because we saw this same phrase, mishpat, used not in the sense of law, in the sense of behavior, in Perek Bet, mishpat ha'kohanim ta'am, to describe how Chofnim Pinchas would treat the people. And there it's, of course, despicable. Here, the people come to Shmuel to reject his sons, much as we've rejected Chofnim Pinchas, and in place of that have a king. And nonetheless, we are now going about Mishpat HaMelech, the way that the king's going to behave. And the king's behavior is going to be as extortionist and exploitative as Chofnim Pinchas were in the Mishkan, as we see. Let's see what the rules of the king are. So again, the people have come to Shmuel, Shmuel to Hashem, Hashem now back to Shmuel, and now Shmuel is going to tell the people what Hashem said. Vayomer Shmuel et kol divrei Adonai el ha'am ha'shoalim eto melech. So the group that was there to ask for a king, and now Shmuel responded to them and told them what the rule of the king is. And now from Pasuk Yod Aleph through Tet Zayin, there's a list of all of the things that the king will take. It's machloket in Masachet Sanhedrin whether this means that the king really does have the rights to these things or not. Here we go. First of all, he's going to take your sons. He's going to put them in his chariots and has his cavalry. They'll also be running in front of his chariot, his runners, and as part of his ostentatious presentation. And he'll make them into generals and officers in charge of thousands, in charge of fifties. They'll also be working in his fields, plowing, and reaping. They'll also work in munitions and in the garage. They'll be working on making weapons and making chariots. That's the sons. He's going to take your daughters. Yikach. And here we're a little surprised because we would assume that they would go to the harem, but rather the rakachotu, the tabachotu, liofot. They will come to be perfumers and grinders of spices and cooks and bakers. This, by the way, is the famous phrase that the Rambam used in his letter to Chachmei Marseille about the role of secular wisdom. It serves as perfumers and cooks and bakers. He's going to take your fields. Now, the field here means a wheat field. How do I know that? Because the next one is a vineyard and an olive. What does olive here mean? Olive means olive grove. From context, it doesn't mean an olive tree or an olive fruit, but rather an olive grove, just like a vineyard and a field. And since we have covered vineyard and olive grove, Eretz Yisrael, as we know, is noted for its Dagan Tirosh V'Yitzar, its wheat, its grape juice, and its oil. And so therefore, Sadot here undoubtedly means wheat and fields. Hatovim, all the good fields, Yikach, v'natan lavadav, he's going to give them to his servants. V'zarechem v'charechem. Now that he's taken all of your good fields, he's also going to tax your seeds and your vineyards. Yasor, he's going to take a tenth. It may not mean exactly a tenth, it may just mean a tax. V'natan the sarisav lavadav, he's going to give it to his sarisim, we'll talk in a minute about sarisim, and avadav. Sarisim is generally translated as eunuchs, but that's not really what it means. The word saris originally comes from the Sumerian word sharesh, which means shel rosh, meaning the one who attends the face of the king, a very close minister of the king. And you see this in Megillat Esther, where sarisei hamelach are the people who are closest to the king. However, in many cases, the people closest to the king also attended to the queen and to the harem, and therefore they were castrated in order to make sure that there wouldn't be problems. And the word evolved to meaning a castratum or a eunuch. And therefore the verb lesares in Hebrew means to castrate. And it's an isur of serus. We're familiar with the prohibition of castration of animals, etc. But that's what it means here. Lasari Saval Avadam means his close cabinet members and his servants. He's going to take your taxes and give it to them. Vet avdechem et shifchotechem et bachurechem atovim, your servants and your maid servants, and bachurechem atovim can't mean your sons because they're already taken. It must mean the young men, meaning the young slave men, or the ones who are born to the slaves. He will take. Vet chamorechem, he'll also take your donkeys, which is parallel to in our day your cars. Yikach v'yasam lemachto. He's going to use it for his own stuff. Sonchem yasor. He's also going to take a tax from your flock. V'atem tiulo lavadim. In the end, you're all going to be slaves to him. In other words, the state's going to take everything, and all of the good stuff you work for is going to be taken by the state, and you're going to be his slaves. Now, Shmuel is not telling this to the people so that the people should be comforted. He's telling this to the people so they should be frightened and should turn around and say, whoops, we didn't mean it. Take it back. We don't want a king. Let's stay where we are. But look what happens when people are frustrated and when people are determined. Vayima'anu uza'aktem bayom ahum lifrim al-kachem. And you know what's going to happen? You're going to cry out in front of your king. Shebachartem lachem. Notice, malkachem. Shebachartem lachem. Your king that you chose for you. Again, removing himself and HaKadosh Baruch Hu from the picture. And God will not answer you on that day. You choose a king, let your king help you. If your king's giving you trouble, too bad. God's not going to answer you. You abandon God, God abandons you. And the people refused to listen to what Shmuel said. Meaning, they heard the words, but they refused to get the message internally and understand what a terrible thing they're setting themselves up for, and to then say, we'll change our minds. And they said, no. Here the word ki means rather. Rather, we do want a king. We want to be like the other nations, again, as we mentioned. Now we find out what they really want. We want our king to lead us and to go out in front of us, meaning to war. V'nilchamet milchamotenu, and to fight our wars. In other words, what the people want is a military leader who will go and fight, and specifically with the Plishtim, and another enemy that we'll meet in Perek Yud Aleph, in chapter 11. And that's what why we're so desperate for a king. We're frightened and we're tired of all of the punishment we're taking from these enemies. We need a proper leader who will bring us all together and create a standing army and will lead that army into war against our enemies. Vayishma Shmuel et kol divrei ha'am vayidabrei bo ozni Adonai. Shmuel heard all of this and he then related it to Hashem. Vayomer Adonai el Shmuel, and how does the parak end? Hashem says to Shmuel, Shma bekolam, again the same refrain, listen to their voice, heed what they're saying. V'imlachta lahem melech. In other words, as opposed to what the people are supposed to be doing, which is lishmo b'kol Hashem, here Hashem is shomem b'kol am. As opposed to the people heeding God's voice, God is heeding the people's voice. And he says to Shmuel, appoint a king for them. V'yomer Shmuel, anshei Yisrael, l'chu ish liro. And how does the parak end? Shmuel says to the people, everybody go home. But everybody go home with clearly with the implication, we've accepted the request and now we're going to find a king. And now the stage is set for the next sub-text, or the sub-unit within Sefer Shmuel. This is the bridge that takes us from the end of the Shoftim period, and the last Shofet, who is Shmuel, the last of the chieftains, if you will, which is Shmuel. And now we've got a bridge, and that moves us, and very immediately in Perek Tet, in chapter 9, we're going to meet the first king, perhaps, who will then be the one who will fit this bill. Now, as I mentioned earlier on, the structure of this parak approximates an earlier story involving Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's the story at the foot of Mount Sinai, chapter 19 in the book of Exodus, Shmot Perek Yud Tet in Parshat Yitro. However, note the difference. There, Hashem initiates the dialogue with Moshe. Hashem says to Moshe, come up to the mountain, tells him what to tell Bnei Israel. Moshe goes and tells the people. People tell Moshe, we're ready. Moshe goes up and tells Hashem, they're ready. Hashem says to Moshe, tell them to separate from their wives for 3 days, etc. Again, Moshe comes up, and then finally, Hashem reveals himself and anoints himself or makes himself as king of the people, and the people accept him as their king. Here, in our case, we have a total reversal of that. The same structure, inverted. It's the people who come to the prophet, not Hashem to the prophet. The people come to the prophet, and they initiate the dialogue, and he comes to Hashem, and Hashem sends it back, etc. Because in this case, the people are moving away from God being their king, and are appointing their own king, or requesting a human king, which, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu has said, perhaps is necessary, perhaps may be the right thing politically to do now, but in the larger scheme of things is as much of an abandonment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as is idolatry. We will see how all of this plays out. Just as an aside, it has often been said that the best argument in favor of a monarchy is the book of Shoftim, which ends, of course, with the banner statement, "Bayamim ahem ein melech b'Yisrael ish hayashar b'einav yaseh." In those days, there was no king, and everybody did exactly what they wanted, which is a terrible situation. It's equally argued that the best argument against the monarchy is Sefer Malachim, is the book that records the actual kings who lived and the way that they lived, and the fact that very few kings, none in the northern kingdom and very few in the southern kingdom, were anything for us to write home about. In any case, we will pick up with the next subunit of Sefer Shmuel in the next podcast. Everyone should have a wonderful day. Shalom.